Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It is the Zach Gelb Show right here on CBS Sports Radio. New book coming out on October 13th. Make sure you get it. It's called The Captain, and it's authored by David Wright and Anthony DeComo. And now joining us is the former Mets captain and third baseman, and he was a seven-time All-Star in his playing days, and that's David Wright. David, can't thank you enough for doing this. Thanks for the time, and how you been?
Oh, are you kidding me? Thanks for having me. Appreciate that.
Well, really do appreciate you coming on. So you've been away from the game in terms of playing, and I know you had injuries throughout your career, but the last 2 years you've officially been retired and haven't been a part of the team for the regular seasons. Why did you think now was the right time to come out with a book?
You know, it's funny because Anthony, who did a wonderful job with the book, and he approached me right kind of after my last game in 2018, and he said, look, I'd like to write a book, you know, and I really want you to kind of partner up with me. And, you know, I joke with him saying that I didn't want him to screw it up. So that's why I kind of came on board to help him out. But, you know, for athletes, and I think baseball players in general, you play so many games that, you know, you don't get the opportunity to enjoy some of the successes you have on the field because you're always looking forward to that next challenge or you're looking forward to who you're facing tomorrow. You're preparing, you're trying to get better. So, you know, writing this book with Anthony and reminiscing about some of the good times and some of the good games and some of the good at-bats and some of those successes put a smile on my face because I got to kind of enjoy, you know, some of those games looking back on it and kind of, you know, watch some of those highlights. And it brought a smile on my face and, you know, really had a good time reminiscing and talking baseball.
Was there a moment or two when you're going through this process, and like we said, it's an extensive process, that you said, wow, maybe I didn't remember that, or maybe I didn't think about that memory or two in the last, like, 5-10 years?
Well, I think when you're in the middle of it, you think that you're a lot better than you really are. So watching some of this stuff, it was like, man, I thought I was faster. Man, I thought I hit that ball further. You know, so it's kind of funny how when you're in the thick of it, you know, you're thinking or you're seeing one thing, and then Anthony, our co-author, brings kind of another perspective, and then re-watching it on tape or film or whatever, you know, you kind of get to relive some of this stuff. So, there were certain, you know, at-bats or certain games where, you know, in my mind I had it going. You know, it wasn't like crazy big details. It was these little small details that, you know, I remember going this way, and it obviously went that way, or, you know, I didn't, you know, I really – got all that ball, but, you know, I really didn't, you know, kind of stuff like that. But, you know, what was real neat, too, is I got a chance to pick out 30 or so pictures for the middle of the book. And, you know, I called my dad and my mom in Virginia back home, and I said, hey, I need some pictures. Can you send some of the family pictures? So a couple of days later, I get 4 huge boxes of family pictures. And going through that and seeing my grandparents who have passed, you know, holding me as a baby, and, you know, my grandfather, my dad teaching me how to hit with this old big wooden bat in the backyard, playing wiffle ball, and, you know, my grandfather, my father putting me in the pool, you know, with the wooden bat and swinging it underwater like Greg Jeffries used to do. You know, stuff like that really brought a smile to my face, and it was, you know, it was this cool experience to kind of reminisce all the way from, you know, as long as I can remember being a kid all the way up to, obviously, my final game and family life after baseball.
David Wright here with us on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. His book coming out on October 13th. It's called The Captain by David Wright and Anthony DeComo. What was your favorite individual moment from your career, and then also your favorite team moment from your career, David?
I think it's the same thing. I would say that the 2015 World Series, I was diagnosed with, my spinal stenosis, the condition that would ultimately end my career at the beginning of 2015. And to put in that work and do all those rehabs and physical therapy sessions to get back on the field and be a small part of that run to the World Series in 2015, certainly the greatest team accomplishment for me. But for me personally, also, game three, I get a chance to hit a World Series home run, which is, what dreams are made of. I remember in Virginia, in my backyard, 3-2 pitch, game seven of the World Series, although we didn't make it to game seven, here comes the pitch, whack, home run. And to be able to live that out and enjoy the moment as you're kind of running around the bases and seeing Citi Field in New York just absolutely rock was, probably my greatest individual moment on a baseball field as well.
With all the injuries that you did go through, I know that there's a lot of physical pain, but there also has to be mental pain as well. And now mental health is such a big topic of the conversation, and there's a lot of acceptance with mental health now in the year of 2020. When you go through your injuries, how did you deal with it, and how did you keep yourself in a good mental state of mind, even when you were going through things with a lot of pressure that clearly was not easy to do?
That's a great question. And, when I was diagnosed with spinal stenosis in the beginning of 2015, I had no idea what it was. And obviously, the doctor, the first thing he tells me is just don't Google it. And of course, I Google it. And it's, career ending this, career ending that. It's player A ended his career, player B ended his career. It was unlike me. But for about 24, 48 hours after the diagnosis, I sulked. I hung my head. I felt sorry for myself, which is not one of my characteristics. And, after those 2 days, I became angry. I was mad that why is this happening to me? Why is it happening now? I'm supposed to be in the prime of my career. We have a good team, and then it became this crazy challenge for me the mantra that was in my head was, you're not going to allow this diagnosis to define you as a player or a person. You're going to rise up to the challenge, you're going to beat it, and you're going to make it back on the field. Now, ultimately, it ended my career, but at the time, it was this uphill climb of me guaranteeing myself in my head that I'm going to beat this, and I'm going to come back and help this team get to where we want to get. And ultimately, that was a World Series run, so I take a great deal of pride in, kind of not rolling over and allowing it, to define the end of my career. And, I didn't play much more after that, but I got a chance to, as we just talked about, experience the greatest thrill for me as a team and individually on a baseball field because I worked hard and came back and was able to finish that 2015 season with my team.
You're such a positive person, and there's one thing to be a great baseball player, but then there's another thing to have no one say a bad word about you, and that's pretty much what we have when we talk to David Wright and talk about David Wright. You can't find anyone that has a bad word to say about him. So, what I just want to follow up with that, with your positive, upbeat attitude, and hey, when anyone goes through what you had to go through, there's going to be periods of negativity and frustration. How did you grow not to resent the game, which was your love, even though it was getting taken away from you?
It's interesting because I was so fortunate. And I think throughout my career, I've always been very thankful of the opportunities that were given to me. Now, I'm sure a lot of it is just God-given ability. Thankfully, or at least I think, my parents had fairly athletic genes, and they were passed down at some point. But the foundation that not just as a baseball player, but my upbringing was built on was that this blue-collar approach of hard work and dedication will ultimately lead you to your goals and your dreams. And, even my parents, they'd be lying if they said, when I was a kid, I'd say, I want to be a professional baseball player. They'd say, okay, let's pump the brakes a little bit. Let's do good at school, put in the work there. You can put in the work in baseball, but there's always going to be a plan B. And, I made great grades because of it. I wasn't allowed to play baseball unless I made the grades. So I think my upbringing, I was always fortunate to be in the position that I was, but my game was built on hard work, and putting in the time. When I took the field on a nightly basis, you know, I wasn't the most talented. I wasn't the most gifted. I was 6 foot, 200 pounds. You know, I was playing against Barry Bonds and Derek Jeter and Mike Trout, and, you know, some of the best to ever put the uniform on. But I told myself when I took the field that night, I've prepared more than anybody else on this field, and for one night, I'm going to be the best player on this field. And that was my mindset, and I truly believed it, that I was more prepared than everybody. Therefore, I was going to be a better player that specific night.
When did you know, because you said that you always grew up wanting to be a baseball player, and hey, I wanted to be a baseball player too growing up as a kid, and then I realized I couldn't hit a curveball, so that dream went right out the window. When was that moment for you, though, David Wright, where you said, okay, this isn't just a dream, and this is getting close to reality?
Well, I couldn't hit a curveball either, so thankfully I was okay at hitting the fastball. So, you know, I'm glad that pitchers never picked up on the not being able to hit the curveball thing. But, you know, I was always, you know, one of the better ones on my team growing up. You know, but when I got to high school, you know, I didn't know how I stacked up against the rest of Virginia or the rest of the East Coast or the kids from Florida or Texas or California or, you know, the Caribbean. You know, I didn't know how I stacked up. So I got invited to some of these, you know, big time tournaments where I played and fortunately had some good showings. But still, you know, I didn't know, you know, was I a first round draft pick? Was I a 10th round draft pick? You know, am I going to go to college? Am I going to sign? You know, I had no idea. So I would say I knew that I had a chance at making a living at this, probably in AA. In 2004, I started the season in AA, and I think I hit 350 or 360 the first couple months. And, you know, they say AA is where all the top prospects are. And I was like, okay, if I can do this against some of the elite prospects in baseball, you know, maybe I can do this at the major league level. And that gave me so much confidence, that start I got off in AA. And, you know, I ended the season in the big leagues, had a little bit of success there, and that just it snowballed for me and just gave me more and more confidence moving forward.
How has this transition been for you? I know you're working with the Mets still as an advisor, but what has the transition been like when you officially hang up the cleats and are no longer a player?
It's difficult. It really is. You know, I'd been a Met for over half my life. Every day I woke up, whether it was the season or the off season, it was, what can I do to get better? You know, my day revolved around either playing a baseball game or preparing for a baseball game or season. You know, so it was weird to wake up and not have that drive of building your day around baseball. And that's one of the things I miss most. I miss competing. I miss the camaraderie. I miss the team aspect. You know, I would say the only thing I don't miss is physically how I felt towards the end.
Yeah.
But it's tough to come to grips, and every athlete says it. You know, they want to go out on their own terms. They want to write their final chapter. And, you know, ultimately I didn't get that, but I kind of did with the Mets being so gracious and giving me that one last night, that kind of send-off where, you know, I got to kind of rest my head on my pillow at night knowing I did everything I could to get to that point. It wasn't enough physically. I just couldn't do it physically. You know, but I get to put this uniform on one more time, say thank you to the fans, say thank you to the city, and just share the love that I have for that organization.
What do you think you're doing 5 years from now? What is David Wright like professionally?
I hope, well, I don't know about professionally, but I hope being a pretty good father and a husband. You know, I got some young ones at home, so my coaching debut got interrupted by COVID. We got one game in of 3- and 4-year-old co-ed T-ball. And we did get our team pictures, but, you know, to prove it. But, you know, it's, I want to really be there for, I want to coach whatever they want to do. You know, I don't know much about soccer or, you know, basketball or volleyball, but, you know, whatever they want to do, I want to be a part of it. Professionally, I love staying involved with the Mets and with the game, but it has to be at kind of an arm's length. I can't do anything full time right now. I owe it to my family to be here full time. But just when I start missing it, you know, I get a chance to go to spring training and work with some of the younger infielders or work with some of the younger hitters. Then I come back and be, you know, be dad. And then I start missing it and I get a chance to go to New York and, you know, sit in some of the front office meetings and, you know, talk about how to make the team better and, you know, the trade deadline and things like that. And, you know, I get the adrenaline pumping again, and then, you know, I come home and be dad. And, you know, so I get a chance to stay involved, but kind of in a part-time role. So that's probably what I foresee 5 years down the road. I hope I can stay involved. I hope I'm invited to stay involved. So that would be my goal.
So if the Mets come to you in 4 or 5 years, and I know what you just said about the family component being such a huge part of it, and they said, David Wright, we want you to be the next manager. Would you be able to turn that down? Because I know what you said about the family, but I think your love of the game may prevent you from turning that down.
Yeah, I don't. I would probably disagree, because I don't think I can give the position what it deserves to be given. You know, I don't think that I could. I don't think I could do it justice with you know, what I want to do outside of baseball, you know, right now. And it sounds selfish, and I guess it is, but it mainly has to do, you know, with my young family. So, you know, it'd be an honor and a privilege to be considered in that light. But I'd probably say that I disagree in the fact that I don't think coaching or managing, and never say never, but I don't foresee it in my future. But, you know, again, I guess never say never.
Fair enough. What would you have been like, and I know you'll probably get this experience next year as a T-ball manager. I think a lot of people would be interested to see you manage some T-ball games.
Yeah, so, you know, it's kind of a bit of a funny story. Is my first T-ball game, I get there early. I don't know what to expect, because I think, you know, I didn't know if we were the home team or away team. So one of the coaches has to set up the field, you know, put the bases in. You know, they're too young to line the field, but put the bases in, make sure all the tarps are off, the pitching, you know, all that stuff. And, you know, so I get there early. I'm the first one there. The opposing coach, you know, comes up, and, you know, the opposing coach, you know, says, "Hey, nice to meet you." We introduce ourselves. He's like, you know, I said, "Hey, I'm gonna let you take the lead here. This is my first game. You know, you kind of follow your lead. You know, you let me know kind of some of the rules of 3 and 4 year old co-ed T-ball, and I'll follow suit." He goes, "Okay." He goes, "And plus, I played a little, you know, college ball." And I was like, "Oh, really? Oh, that's great." You know, he goes, "Yeah, I was, you know, it's pretty good." I said, that's great." He goes, "Did you play?" I said, "I dabbled
a
little
bit."
You know, no. I said, I said, "I dabbled a little bit, but I'm going to take your lead on this one." He says, "Okay." And we went out and played the T-ball game. So I got a, you know, nice chuckle out of that. But it's kind of fun to, you know, just kind of turn on that, the dad and the dad moment, where you're kind of just coaching the T-ball team and they're running the wrong way on the bases and they don't know where the positions are. And, you know, they get the biggest smile when they finally make contact off the tee for the first time. It's you know, pretty rewarding experience.
Wait, was this in New York, New Jersey? What state was this in?
No. So we're out in Southern California now.
Okay. How do you not know who David Wright is?
My wife's from out here. So, you know, I guess, again, I thought I was better than I was. And, you know, it's just maybe I didn't, you know, make my mark against the Dodgers out here as much as I thought I did.
I think you had some success against them, honestly. You guys beat them in a few postseason series.
We did. We got them twice. So, you know, hopefully, I guess that wasn't enough.
Let me ask you this before we let David Wright run. Once again, the name of the book is The Captain. Comes out on October 13th. David Wright is my guest. You could also check out Anthony DiComo as well, who's a part of this writing process. Does a great job covering the Mets. How do you compare, since we talk about the Dodgers and beating them twice, how do you compare just the overall season of 2006 to 2015, which, you know, we saw the Mets losing the NLCS and the Mets losing the World Series both those years?
You know, that's an excellent question as well, and I've had some time to think of this, you know, while writing the book, because we cover both of those in the book, and they were such different teams. You know, 2006, you know, we had some mashers in the middle of that lineup. You know, we had Beltran, Delgado, Lodeuco was an all-star, Jose Reyes was an all-star. You know, we just had, seemed like all-star after all-star down our lineup, and, you know, we scored a ton of runs. You know, in 2015, it was so different because the team was built around our young starting stud pitching. I mean, you're talking about Harvey, DeGrom, Syndergaard, you know, Steven Matz. I mean, it was such a different feel. Now, I probably didn't get a chance to enjoy the 2006 run as much as I should have, because at the time I'm 23, 24 years old, and it's like, okay, you know, this is the first of many postseason experiences. You know, we got a young core. We're going to be back here next year. Well, that didn't happen for 9 years, and that was 2015. We make that run, and I really soaked it in and enjoyed those moments, because I realized how much hard work goes into making the postseason, and I didn't get the opportunity for a 9-year stretch. So, if you're asking if I had to pick one or the other, I would say the 2015 team was just, it was so rewarding for me personally and for us as a team with everything we had gone through. And, you know, give me those young power pitchers, you know, any day of the week, and I think we can win against anybody.
When I walked out of this,
except the Royals.
Yeah. Games 1, 4, and 5, David. Those should have been victories, if we're being honest. But
yeah.
When I walked out of Citi Field that night after game 5, I was really proud of that team. And I thought they were going to get back and be good for such a long time because of the pitching. And then a lot of the pitching just unfortunately didn't reach its potential because of the injuries. But to see what's happened to Matt Harvey, and hey, you've dealt with success, and then you've dealt with some injuries at the end of your career and during your career too. Just what do you feel when you look back at what has transpired with Matt?
I mean, I'm so thankful that, A, I got a chance to get to know Matt on a personal level, and B, you know, what he did for us as an organization. I mean, you're talking about a guy that really gave it all for the New York Mets and, was about as dominant as anybody, for that however many year stretch. So, I owe almost all the credit to Matt and helping us not only get to the postseason, but get us to the World Series that year. And none of us get a chance to experience what World Series baseball is like without Matt Harvey. You know, I'm a huge fan of Matt. You know, I'm rooting for a turnaround here where he, you know, gets a second win, gets a second chance, and, finds a way to get back to his former self, because, he certainly deserves it. And I think the game owes him, for what he did for our organization and, you know, what he did for me personally and kind of putting us on his back and getting us to the World Series.
The last thing I'll say, and I just want to share this because I really want the listeners to know how great of a person you are. First time I met David Wright, just everyone listening on CBS Sports Radio, as we're wrapping up with David Wright, make sure you get his book coming out on October 13th. I was actually in probably 6th or 7th grade. I had blue frosted tips at a WFAN caravan event, and I met David, and my friend was actually just getting out of the hospital. He was in and out of the hospital because he was going through chemotherapy as he had Ewing sarcoma cancer, bone cancer, and David and Cliff Floyd actually left. I think you guys were going to a Knicks game, and Steve Traxel and Tom Glavine and Chris Woodward got a hold of you guys because all my friend wanted to do was meet David Wright. You guys blew off the Knicks game that night, came back to, I want to say it was the Hard Rock in New York City, and you spent 2 hours with us. And I thought that was one of the coolest things as someone that was in the 6th or 7th grade, and it really showed me how someone could have it all like David Wright, but at the end of the day, you're just an unbelievable person.
Well, I appreciate that. And you know, like I said, you setting that up for your friend speaks, you know, volumes of you as a friend more than, you know, us as coming in, and you set everything up. So you deserve all the credit for that. But yeah, it's, I think a lot of athletes, none of us go out there and looking for credit, but I think that, being in the position that we're in, we can certainly, you know, not just give back, but be influential in, the next generation, not just of baseball players, but the next generations of citizens, and try to pay it forward. So, you know, I appreciate you telling that story, but again, you deserve more of the credit than we do.
Nah, it's all you. I'm not going to take any credit for that one, but I appreciate your words. Once again, The Captain by David Wright, Anthony DiComo, comes out on October 13th. He is David Wright. David, good health to you and your family. Really appreciate you doing this.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me. It was fun talking a little baseball.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.